Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Magnificent Monday to all of you. Thanks for joining me today on the show. Hope your week's off to a good start. If it's not, we'll certainly make it better. Or try. We'll fail valiantly in the attempt if necessary. 888-914-9149 is the number to call toll free to talk to me on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program. Cale@relevantradio.com is the address. CALE@relevantradio.com. And follow me on Twitter. That is my social media platform of choice. Really, I'm not really anywhere else. So at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. That's where to find me there. Because it's educational. It's informative. I learn a lot from Twitter. But I should say this. We had that you would notice if you were following me on Twitter is that we've been talking about a lot of really intriguing topics over the last few days on the show. That's why producer Jim does this. And lately we've been doing it on Mondays, just to give you a taste of what you might have missed. We don't want you to have FOMO. So we're going to give you another acronym. It's called TWTW, The Week That Was. I had to think about that for a second to make sure I didn't mess that one up. But producer Jim, this is a surprise to me. I don't even know what he has decided what were the unmissable moments of last week. But let's find out. Here's the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Check it. Everybody on planet Earth gets some sunlight, whether you're living in Greenland or whether you're living in Miami, Florida. Okay, some get more than others. And it's like that with the light of God, the truth of God. We all know something about God, even if it's just through the natural law. Somebody living in the jungle, hypothetically, who's never seen a Bible, doesn't know anything about the God of Jesus Christ, who can see the stars at night, can see the vast beauty of creation, say there's got to be a God, right? In Psalm 19, it says the heavens are declaring the glory of God. The point is everybody knows something about God. No, everybody has a shot at salvation. It's how we respond to the light that we have that makes the difference. Okay, this was a virtual death sentence for this 13-year-old girl named Alyssa, and she was going to pass away. So this team of doctors and scientists used this tool to basically create, to engineer a new type of T cell. And what they used was this new T cell to then hunt down and kill the cancerous T cells in Alyssa's body. Now, after 3 months of this experimental therapy, they did have some signs of the cancer still being there, but then they did two more checkups later and it was completely gone. They couldn't find any trace of it at all. This is truly amazing. A drink of bourbon has been shown to calm nerves and reduce stress. The number two health benefit of bourbon is apparently it improves your immune system. Because apparently bourbon is full of antioxidants. Now, we've heard a lot about antioxidants and talk about health that's been in the media in recent years. Now, antioxidants eliminate what are called free radicals, and they keep your immune system functioning in a healthy way. There were guys at the Council of Nicaea who had been imprisoned for the true faith. They had been persecuted. Many of them were missing limbs. Eyes had been gouged out. They really suffered for the truth of the gospel. Just as St. Paul says, I bear the marks of Christ on my body. Don't give me any trouble. Don't give me any guff, because I bear the marks of Christ on my body, my suffering for the truth of the gospel. And they weren't going to stand for this heresy.
I am Nacho, the luchador.
Who?
Maybe you have seen me on TV. Nacho!
Now, Upworthy.com is reporting the story of the real-life priest whose real life inspired the film. And his name is Father Sergio Gutierrez Benitez. And that is an incredible, incredible true story. And he turned to Lucha Libre Wrestling in Mexico to support the orphan children that he was caring for. There had been alarm bells going off, and Archbishop Chaput was asked about some recent developments that are going on in Rome, speaking of something that was founded by St. John Paul II, the Pontifical Academy for Life. And so he was asked, what about this? What do you think about this? And he said, quote, "I think some of the changes over the past few years at the Pontifical Academy for Life and the John Paul II Institute have been imprudent and destructive. In fact, the whole purpose of the Institute that John Paul established has been turned upside down, a clear insult to his magisterium and legacy. There's no fidelity in watering down or breaking with the substance of the documents that you mentioned," end of quote. So this is pretty, wow, you don't hear bishops talk like this too much in public, but he really lays it out there. He says it's an insult to the magisterium of John Paul II. This takes us back to the beginning of the year. Season opening game was Tampa Bay over the Cowboys, and Tampa looked like they were going to get back to the Super Bowl, but they've had so many injuries. Their offensive line has been a mess. Their offense hasn't, ever since the departure of Coach Bruce Arians, it just hasn't been the same. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I do think the Bucks will prevail in the end. Hey, there you go. Take to the bank. Well, if you went with my predictions, you might want to challenge that one because I'm not going to say what my record is right now. Our producer, Jim Patrick Alog, who's answering the phones right now, 888-914-9149. When you call in with your question or comment, make sure you congratulate him on going 4-1 so far in his NFL picks. So he's the Swami at the moment, I'll tell you that. But hey, there's one more game left tonight. And to break it all down later in the week, Rich Gannon, big fan of Relevant Radio, NFL MVP, Rich Gannon, great friend of the program. He's going to be popping by later this week to kind of decompress us and break down what happened over the weekend. Look forward to the divisional round next week. So that's coming up. By the way, also, a few fiction fans out there, and I got to confess, you know, confession time here. I'm not really a great reader of fiction. I have to say that. But a lot of you are, and you guys are going to be super, super excited about my guest tomorrow, live on the program, Dean Koontz, the famed author Dean Koontz is going to be my guest on the Cale Clark Show, only on Relevant Radio, tomorrow, on Tuesday, at the same channel, at the same time. So make sure you tell all your friends, and if you have questions for him, hopefully he'll be willing to take questions. I can't promise anything, but he is going to be on the show tomorrow night. So that's something to really look forward to as well. And I'll be hopefully in the next week that was. We'll see. But hey, that Cash Money register sound effect that Jim just played kind of makes me think of what we're going to talk about right now, because it's Monday. The markets are closed today because of the holiday, Dr. Martin Luther King Day, of course, in the United States. But a lot of you guys are thinking about this. As always, you're kind of looking at your credit card bill from the holidays. And maybe, how am I going to pay this off? And of course, there is an art and a science to money. And it's part of stewardship, right? Time, talent, and treasure that God has entrusted us with. Have to prove faithful in this area as well. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And in the past, we've had our resident financial guru at Relevant Radio, Preston Alex, join us. And we had some really fun conversations about this. I should have asked him to come on tonight to talk about this, but he's so busy. I can't have him on every Monday night. But hey, if you want to call in, Preston, if you're listening, if you're driving home, by all means, please give me a shout. Morgan Housel, there's an author by the name of Morgan Housel who wrote a book called The Psychology of Money. And he also wrote a blog post just a couple of days ago about this very topic, the art and science of spending money. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, but I wanted to kind of walk you through this because I found it a fascinating read. I really did, because he talks about how the way we spend our money tells us a lot about ourselves, who we aspire to be, what our priorities are, so many things. And he starts off the piece by talking about Jack Welch. Now, a lot of you guys will remember who Jack Welch was, the CEO of General Electric. He was a very, very famous businessman back in the day. And at one point, he nearly died from a heart attack. And he was interviewed about this years after the fact. And he was asked, well, what was going through your mind when you're in the ambulance, you're on your way to the hospital, might have been your last moments on planet Earth. What was going through your mind? And here's what Jack Welch said. He said, dang, and I'm sanitizing this a little bit. He said, dang it, I didn't spend enough money. And the interviewer was like, what? That's what you're thinking as you're in cardiac arrest and you might be a goner. I didn't spend enough money. What are you talking about? And Jack Welch said, quote, "We are all products of our background. I didn't have two nickels to rub together when I was young, so I'm relatively cheap. I always bought cheap wine." End of quote. So he swore that if he ever got better, he said, "I am never going to buy a bottle of wine that costs less than $100." And he said that was my takeaway from that experience. And the interviewer was like, "That's it?" And Welch is like, "Yeah, that's about it." Wow, what an intriguing conversation. And so Morgan Housel says, this is how finances are really, really complicated. There's this human element. It's emotional. It's nonsensical at times. It's messy. It's very, very personal. And we all have probably heard about the field of behavioral science. It's kind of statistically based, very, very regimented field of study to try to figure out why people deal with money the way that they do. But Housel says you got to look deeper than that. You've got to look into the psychology of money. And that's probably why he wrote a book called The Psychology of Money. And he said, look, when you think about how you actually spend your money, this often tells us what people find valuable in life. It's very existential. Who they want to spend their time with, the kind of attention that they want from other people. So he says there's a science to it and there's also an art. Now, the science would be budgeting. And Preston Alex took us through the importance of a budget one of the times when he was on the show. But there's also an art to spending money. And this is why Morgan Housel, in his book, he calls money the greatest show on earth. So not the greatest show on turf, producer Jim. I know you're big St. Louis. Well, they're not the St. Louis Rams anymore, of course. But when they were the St. Louis Rams, they had the greatest show on turf. They had Kurt Warner. There's a movie about him that came out recently. Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, the greatest show on turf. Amazing. But the greatest show on earth, according to Morgan Housel, is how money reveals things about people's character and their values. Because you can't really look at people's investments. They're not going to open up their investment bank account to you and show you what they're spending, what they're investing in for the future necessarily. Some people talk about it, I guess, but he says how they spend their money, that is very visible. It's often very public, and it shows a lot about who people are. So he noticed, in this piece, he talks about 13 things that he noticed about the way people spend their money in terms of the art of spending their money. And the first thing he says, and you're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149, the first thing he says is that family background and past experiences heavily influence your spending. And this is the part of the Jack Welch story, that he was relatively cheap because he didn't grow up with much cash. So when he had it, and he had lots of it, more than he could ever spend, he was still frugal, even when he was a multi-millionaire. And he would buy bottles of wine that were totally cheap. Like, why would he do that? Well, it's because of his background. And so in the article, Housel quotes a Washington Post headline from June of 1927. Remember back in the Roaring Twenties? Well, some of you might remember, some of you might have been there, but we've at least heard about the Roaring Twenties right before the Great Depression that happened in the 1930s, which was so tragic. But back in the 20s, everybody was living life high on the hog, or so it seemed. And in June of 1927, the Washington Post, a writer named Robert Quillen, wrote a piece that was titled, "The More You Were Snubbed While You Were Poor, the More You Enjoy Displaying Your Wealth." And certainly in that gilded age, many people think of the Great Gatsby, and they enjoyed, if they had kind of hit it big and made it rich, they enjoyed displaying their wealth, as many people still do today. And he talks about how, we've talked about something on the show before that was called revenge bedtime procrastination. I don't know if you remember this, but this is a phenomenon that happened during COVID where people were so tired of working from home and having their lives disrupted and being on lockdown that they would stay up late and binge watch shows and be kind of irresponsible in that sense. And there's something else that happened because of COVID too, and it was called revenge spending, revenge COVID spending, if you will, because so many people couldn't do so many things when the 2020s started. Forget about the Roaring Twenties, but the 2020s. In the year 2020, travel was shut down. You couldn't go on your vacations anymore. You couldn't necessarily spend. You couldn't go to malls. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. So the second that people could, there was all this pent up spending that went back into the economy. And Housel says there's a different kind of revenge spending that happens with people. And a lot of it happens because of the way people grow up. And very often there are adults who are wealthy, who were poor when they were kids. And because of that, sometimes specifically because of that, they got heckled, they got bullied, they got teased because they were poor. So their revenge, how they take revenge on that, is that they start spending. When they have the means, they buy the biggest houses, the fastest cars, they're driving Lambos, all kinds of jewelry, Rolex watches, you name it. And one of the reasons why they're doing that has nothing to do with the items themselves. It's simply an attempt to heal a wound, an inner wound, a social wound. And they're trying to sort of say, I made it. It's kind of an in-your-face type of thing. And he talks about how, Housel talks about how truly wealthy people who come from generational wealth, that they kind of frown on displays like that. You know, driving the Lambo, driving the McLaren, you know, as The Weeknd sang in one of his songs, a milli point two just to hurt you, you know, it's a million point two just to hurt you. That's the only reason I bought it, is to kind of rub it in your face. Somebody from an old money type of situation would say, man, that is just egotism. And they would eschew that kind of display. So a lot of it is psychological. A lot of it is people trying to prove something, or it's for someone else. It's not necessarily even for yourself. So this is really intriguing. So here's another thing that people do, according to Morgan Housel, is he calls it entrapped by spending. Rather than using money to try to build your life instead is built around money. And he used the example of George Vanderbilt, who spent apparently 6 years building the Biltmore House, the famous Biltmore, 135,000 square feet, 40 master bedrooms, 400 full-time staff. But he hardly ever lived there. He hardly ever went there because he said it was, quote, utterly unaddressed to any possible arrangement of life, end of quote. And apparently the house almost ruined him, and he wound up selling it off, and it's become a tourist attraction. Way back in 1875, here's another op-ed from a newspaper about socialites. It says they, quote, devote themselves to pleasure regardless of expense, end of quote. They devote themselves to pleasure regardless of the expense. But one of the Vanderbilts actually said, one of the heirs to the Vanderbilt fortune actually said, that's actually not true. They actually devote themselves to expense regardless of pleasure. In other words, they spend money, but they often don't even enjoy it. They do not enjoy it. It doesn't, and they understand, and I think sometimes we can learn from somebody, not that we wish people ill or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination, but people who are obscenely wealthy and miserable, that shows us that it does not make you happier. It doesn't make you happier. What oftentimes people do psychologically, and Housel talks about this, is that when they discover that the spending doesn't make them happier, the reaction to that is not to sort of search for the deeper meaning here. Maybe there's something else I need to be looking for. Maybe I need to look to the realm of the soul, the spirit, the immaterial world. Instead, they double down. They just keep spending more and more and more. Okay, well, if this didn't work, if the Lambo didn't work, maybe I need to go to the McLaren, you know, or whatever the case may be. And then it just becomes this vicious cycle. And he talks about how a lot of personal bankruptcies and financial issues are caused by people spending, figuring out there's no joy, and then they just double down. They double down. So they're in financial trouble, and they didn't even have fun getting to this point. And counterexample, he said that he knows this other guy who loves skiing, and he went into massive credit card debt, which is not recommended at all, but he went into massive credit card debt so that he could go skiing in Europe, but he loved it. He loved every second of it. It was maybe a dumb decision financially, but he got so much out of it that he's like, okay, Housel's like, at least I can understand that. At least I can understand that. I don't recommend that course of action, but this guy made a choice, and he was fully in control of what was going on here. But other people, they just have this drive to spend, and they're not getting anything out of it. And it's like they are held captive by money, by mammon. as Jesus says, you can't serve God and mammon. You've got to, mammon will be your God if you let it. So you can't let that happen. You've got to really think about this and take a step back. That's easier said than done. And I've never had that problem. I've never had to worry about that problem. But I think the psychology of it is very, very intriguing. What about for the rest of us who are just kind of trying to muddle through? We don't have that kind of set of resources. Is there something that we can learn psychologically about money, and how can it even affect our spirituality, and especially when it comes to the concept of giving? I think there's a lot we can learn from this. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back, 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program, 888-914-9149. If you're cruising on the highways, or maybe not cruising, maybe you're stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic, don't forget, keep it locked to Relevant Radio. Or if you're listening on the app, relevantradio.com, the app, always a great place to stream and share. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. It's kind of a Money Monday topic. We're talking about the mind and money, and how author Morgan Housel, who wrote the book The Psychology of Money, kind of breaks down some interesting ways that people deal with money, people deal with their finances. He talks about people having what he calls frugality inertia. And this is a little bit like the opening illustration of Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric, when it was in its heyday. Basically, he didn't spend money even when he had it. And he kind of regretted that when he almost died. And so he said, I'm going to try to buy better wine and try to enjoy life a little bit more. And what Housel says is that many people, what they really want out of their money, their resources, is the ability to stop thinking about money. The point of it is to not have to worry about it anymore in a certain sense, so they can focus on living their life. And it reminds me a little bit about what I remember when I was in, when I did my undergraduate degree in business, and we learned about in our management classes, this guy named Abraham Maslow. You probably heard of this concept, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's kind of like a pyramid. And if the basic needs are not met at the bottom, and this is stuff like food, shelter, don't even think about the stuff, but you want to eventually try to climb higher on the pyramid. And at the very top, it's what he calls self-actualization. Like you're living your best life, essentially. You're doing exactly what you're operating in your zone of genius or whatever the case may be. But you can't even think about that if you don't have food on the table. But what happens with some people is that when they achieve their goals, whatever they may be, and your goal doesn't have to be becoming a multimillionaire by any stretch of the imagination. Some people, their goal is not that at all. They just want to be financially independent and have money to give to worthy organizations or whatever the case may be. But some people, when they get to their goal, they still can't enjoy it for some other reason. And they sort of remain in this state of being frugal, which is fine, which is totally fine. And some people just are not spenders, and that's okay. There's nothing to worry about there. But sometimes it's an emotional thing that people kind of need to get their brain wrapped around it and move past this. I don't know. The other thing that people have with regard to emotional attachments is large purchases that they've made with their funds. And this is especially true when it comes to your home. Now, the housing market in the United States, obviously, there's a huge discussion about what's going on there. Is it going to tank? What's happening there? Are prices dropping? And people are very on edge about this, interest rates. And Morgan Housel says that he and his wife, they really pride themselves on making unemotional financial decisions. I mean, they're kind of like the Terminator. They do what needs to be done. But when it came time for them to buy their first house and they were about to have their first child, that kind of went out the window a little bit, and they made a bit of an emotional decision. They went into the driveway of this house that they're looking at, and as soon as they pulled in, his wife said, "I love it. I love it." Because they saw this swing, you know, a swing attached to a tree in the front yard. It was a very idyllic scene. And he said that was it. I mean, they walked into the house and the restaurant was great too. And they just loved it. And they got emotional about it. And they have no regrets about it. They love the house. But he basically says, when you make life-changing decisions that impact you and your family, it's kind of foolish to think that you're going to treat it like a math problem, because it's not really a math problem, because people are involved, emotions are involved, and for, let's face it, for a lot of people, money is, if not everybody, has an emotional component to it. And he talks about this other writer named Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal, and this guy was talking about in an article how his mother eventually sold their longtime home that his family grew up in. And his mother said, "Look, I have no emotional attachment to this house whatsoever. I never even liked it. Never liked the house. I hated the layout. I didn't like it. It never really suited me. But here's the thing. Everything important that ever happened in our lives as a family took place here. And I just can't leave that all behind." I'm sure a lot of you can identify with that. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, by the way, 888-914-9149. It's the emotional impact. He says it's like asking, how much are the memories with your kids worth? You can't put a price tag on it. But then when you say, well, how much is the home worth? Or how much does living in this city as opposed to another city, how does that affect your career, your finances? You could probably quantify that a little bit, put out a number figure, but the emotional attachment, you really can't. You can't quantify it. And so this is the reason why people very often do what they do with their finances. It's not just a robotic decision. Far from it. It's an emotional decision. Here's another thing that happens too, and I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I think we've all had this experience at some point in our life. Morgan Housel talks about how the joy of spending can diminish as income rises because there's less of a struggle, less of a sacrifice, and I guess you could say less sweat equity in what you buy. Think about when you're a kid, you get an allowance, let's say, from your parents. You have to work for it. You have to, I don't know, cut the grass or fold the laundry, or I still struggle with that. My wife, hey, honey, if you're listening, maybe you could give me an allowance and I'll fold the laundry. But okay, say you get your allowance and then you've got something there. You've got a few coins, and then you go to the corner store, you buy a comic book or you buy some candy, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. I earned this. There's a different feeling, right? Or when you get he talks about getting your first paycheck. Go to a fast food joint, get a milkshake or a burger or something, and you're like, man, this is so satisfying because this is the fruit of my own labor, the struggle and the reward. And that's what's often missing sometimes, because when people move up in tax brackets, it's not that big of a deal to them because they don't get the adrenaline, they don't get the satisfaction, if you will. And he talks about, wow, this is a crazy problem to have, but he talks about a guy that he knows who has his own private chef who serves this dude 5-star meals 3 times a day. And he's been doing this for years. And it's like, wow, okay, that's a good problem to have. But in a certain sense, how can he possibly enjoy the food as much as he used to? Looking forward to going out to a nice restaurant. And when you finally do it, it makes it special. But if it's like that all the time, it's you can see why there's sort of a boredom that sets in with people. And then he has this quote from, of all people, Richard Nixon. Okay, of all people. Here's what Richard Nixon says. Very wise words from the former president. He says, quote, "The unhappiest people of the world are those in the international watering places like the south coast of France, Newport, Palm Springs, Palm Beach, going to parties every night, playing golf every afternoon." That doesn't sound too bad, actually, but no, I'm a huge golf nut, but playing golf every afternoon, drinking too much, talking too much, thinking too little, retired, no purpose. Now, while there are those who would disagree with this and say, gee, if I could just be a millionaire, that would be the most wonderful thing. If I could just not have to work every day, if I could just be out fishing or hunting or playing golf or traveling, that would be the most wonderful life in the world. They don't know life. because what makes life mean something is purpose, a goal, the battle, the struggle, even if you don't win it, even if you don't win it, end of quote. That's a pretty good quote from Richard Nixon, former president of the United States. So, hey, if you're listening to the show and you're in Palm Springs, in Palm Beach, and this is what you've seen around you, maybe you can call in, testify. Are these people happy? Are they really happy or not? 888-914-9149. And Nixon says the struggle is what makes it happy. It's the purpose that you have. And so that's part of the psychology of finances as well. So here's another thing. So Morgan Housel also says that sometimes people ask the wrong questions when it comes to their finances. They ask $3 questions when $30,000 questions are all that matter. What do I mean by that? Well, there's another author by the name of Ramit Sethi. I was writing a book called, I think it's called I Will Teach You to Be Rich. I've seen this in the stores. I haven't read it. I've heard of this guy. And he says that too many people ask $3 questions when they should be asking $30,000 questions. What does he mean by that? Well, a $3 question is, can I afford this latte? Can I afford this latte? My question is, where do you get $3 lattes? Most of them are at least $4. That's why a nickname for a certain coffee establishment is $4. I'm not going to say which one it is, but you can probably figure it out. But everything's at least $4. So most people are asking $3 questions. Can I afford this latte? When really they should be asking $30,000 questions, such as, should I be spending $30,000 on this school that I'm thinking about going to? And there's something called Parkinson's Law of Triviality. I've never heard of this before. Parkinson's Law of Triviality, which states that the amount of attention that a problem gets is the inverse of its importance. So here's an example. Let's say there's a finance committee and they have three jobs. They got to figure out three questions. Should we approve the $10 million nuclear reactor that we're thinking of buying? There's a couple other items on the agenda. Somebody wants to buy a bike shed for the, a lot of people are biking to work. They're trying to be healthy. They want to buy a bike shed so their bikes don't get wet and rusty for $400. Should we buy this? Oh yeah, and there's one other item on the agenda. Should we spend $20 a month for employee refreshments in the break room? So what problem do you think they're going to spend the most time on? The $10 million nuclear reactor, the $400 for the bike shed, or $20 for the employee snacks? Well, you guessed it. Here's what the committee does. They approve the $10 million expense for the nuclear reactor immediately. They have no concept of nuclear reactors, what makes a good one. They don't know anything about nuclear technology. They don't know how much these things generally cost. I don't want to look into this. No one's an expert here. Approved. The bike shed, they talk about that a lot more. There's a heated debate about the bike shed. Man, they should just get a bike rack. Should we make this bike shed? Should it be an aluminum bike shed? Should it simply be a wooden shed? You know, what's the deal? But the most discussion happened around, by far, more than two-thirds of their time was spent discussing whether they should spend $20 on snacks in the break room, because everybody's got a take on what is the best cookie, what's the best coffee, should we have a Keurig machine, should we go with something else? I don't know, I'm kind of a French press guy, I don't know, who makes the best potato chips? And they spend all of their time discussing this. So that's an example of asking a $3 question when really you should be thinking about the $30,000 question or the $3 million question. So very well said. Very well said. All right, let's go to the phones right now. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Carrie in California. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
I go ahead.
Oh, you go. You're on the air. Go for it.
Oh, I turned my radio on this morning and you were talking and I usually go to do music. But I like this topic, and I believe that money is the root of all evil. It is. I was the head of household for many years, me and my spouse, of 23 years. And in 2018, I had to go to jail, and he took over. And it just shows you the difference of people, how they look at things. Just because I have a whole bunch of money doesn't mean I spend a whole bunch of money, because I never have it. And I'd rather not have it. My time with people spent much more happier than money spent.
Yeah, that's a great point. And in many ways, you can't miss what you never had. And I just wanted to say one thing, Carrie, that you'd said that money is the root of all evil. You really believe that. That's actually not what Jesus says. It's not what the Bible says. A lot of people aren't aware of this. Jesus actually said that Jesus didn't say this, but it's in the scriptures in the New Testament. I'll find the reference for you in a sec. Or Patrick Alug, you can grab it for me because you are so quick on the draw here. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, is what it actually says. And apologies for not having the exact reference at the tip of my tongue, but it's the love of money that's the problem. So money's a tool, just like anything can be a tool. The internet is a tool, but it can obviously be used for great harm, great evil, but also great good and lots of learning and communication and interaction. And the spreading of the gospel can happen over the internet. It's what we do at Relevant Radio with our website and with our app and things like that. It's the same thing with money. It's a tool, and it often brings out, I think, the best and the worst in people. There's no question about that. 1 Timothy 6:10. Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate that. So St. Paul writing that. So that's an important thing to say. But thank you for your call. That's a great call from California. And now we're going to actually stay on the West Coast. We're going to go to Jacqueline in Fair Oaks, California. Hello, Jacqueline.
Hello, Clay. How's our little Michaela doing today?
Oh, she's great. She's great. She's doing well. Doing well up to all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful.
Thank you for asking.
Oh, I was just telling, I didn't get the man's name who answered the phone call, but I was just telling him how my spirit felt so uplifted here. I was putting some things away after Christmas time, and I'm a senior lady, and I've had some health issues and all that, so I'm moving a little bit slower than a lot of people. But anyhow, when I opened my front door, was after a little tap on the door, and you had just finished speaking about Martin Luther and racism and all that, and where I'm in a gated community, and all of a sudden there's these two little children with the darkest eyes, and you know, dressed very warmly because we've had a lot of rain, and they said, "Can we take your trash to the dumpster or something?" And I looked at them and I said, "You really?" And I said, "Well, yes." I said, "I was just thinking about this about 3 minutes ago, that I best get moving because I need to get this trash to the dumpster before the heavy rain comes." And I said, "And now look at you up here." I said, "You're like two little cherubs to me, you know?" And so I said, "Well, yes, if you could just wait a moment." And it was just so sweet. And I said, "Do you live close by?" And they said, "Well, you know, we are not supposed to say where we live." And I said, "Well, I know you must live close by because this is gated." So I said, "You just be safe, you know?" And they took the two little bags, and then I thought, well, I says, "Can you give your names out?" And the little boy, he's 2 years older than his sister, and he says, "Well, my name is Christian." And the little girl looks at me, and she says, "And my name is Trinity." Mm. Now, can you think of anything that would be more spiritual touching to my heart today?
Wow. Thank you, Jacqueline, for sharing that. And yeah, there's a lot of people out there, and I don't know what these kids were doing, and very often, you know, a lot of kids will come around communities and they'll try to collect things, and whether it's returning them to recycling depots or something like that to try to earn some money. And times are tough for people out there, and that kind of ties into the question that we're asking here about resources, finances, and how do we use them well and for glory. And a lot of people do get, no question, they're tied up in their possessions. Their possessions possess them, and they're not able to have that heart of giving that God is asking of us. And it is really a test of character. There's no question about it. A lot of people can handle, I guess you could say, adversity in the economic realm, and a lot of people can still spiritually flourish when they don't have a lot of resources. But when these resources are often thrust upon them, and this happens a lot in different fields, especially in sports and entertainment. I remember watching a documentary called Broke as part of the ESPN 30 for 30 series, and a lot of athletes who come from disadvantaged economic backgrounds, when they get to the big leagues and they sign these big checks and get these big contracts, very often people take advantage of them, or they make poor decisions and they wind up with nothing, which is a great tragedy. And that ought not to be, but it does show that not everybody can handle this well. And it's something that we need to think about, how just being a good steward in general of not just our financial resources, but again, our bodies, our health, our time, our talents, the gifts that we have. It's really, really important to relate it all back to God. And Another thing that Morgan Housel said in this piece was that a lot of the reasons why people, we talked earlier about people who buy these impressive possessions and maybe they're trying to nurse a social wound that they have, that they were bullied as kids, or they're trying to prove something to others that they're valuable, that they're important. One of the things he said is that no one is impressed with your possessions as much as you are. And he gives the example of, okay, if you see somebody driving a nice car or a cool car, you think, no, nobody says, wow, the guy driving that car must be cool, or the gal driving that car, she must be cool. No, people tend to think, if I had that car, I would look cool in it. So people are always thinking about themselves. The point of it here is that if you're trying to use resources and wealth to try to brag or signal to other people that you're important, you're worthy of admiration, people aren't going to think that anyways. They're not even going to be thinking about you. They're going to be thinking about how they would look in that suit or in that car, whatever the case may be. And so he says that he wrote a letter to his son. Interesting. The day that his son was born, he wrote this letter. He said, quote, "You might think that you will want an expensive car, a fancy watch, a huge house, but I'm telling you, you don't. You don't want these things. What you really want is respect and admiration from other people. And you think that having expensive stuff will bring it. It almost never does, especially from the people you want to respect and admire you." So that's interesting. That's from a letter that he wrote to his newborn son. So character is really what's important here. That's how you get true respect and admiration from other people. People aren't impressed with your stuff. They're impressed about who they are, who you are. That's what they're thinking. They're generally thinking about themselves, but what's going to really get respect from other people is your character, how you treat others, not how many horsepower engine your car has or whatever. So interesting stuff to think about. We're going to be right back on the Cale Clark Show. Got to take a quick break here up against it. But hang on, we'll be right back. 888-914-9149 is the number to call.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Hey, we're talking about a recent piece that I read by Morgan Housel, who wrote the book The Psychology of Money. And he talks about how there's a science to spending money and being a good steward with it, and that's budgeting, things like that. But there's also an art form to it. And the way that people use this resource of finances that we're entrusted with, and all of us have something, whether it's a little or a lot, it reveals a lot about our character, who we are, what we want. And he talks about the social signaling aspect of money. And that can be on things, purchases that people make for themselves, but also how they deal with charitable giving. And he talks about a saying that if you get public recognition for donating money, it's not really charity, it's philanthropy. That's an interesting difference to make. It might sound like hair splitting to some people. But then he says, if you demand recognition, it's not even charity, it's a business deal. It's a business deal. There's a clear social benefit to you when you give in addition to the recipient. And he says, I don't mean that in a negative way, because good donations to worthy causes would plunge if donors didn't get recognition. Think about in universities, endowed academic chairs. You know, they're often named after the person who donated the money for this department to function, or wings in hospitals, or even pews in churches or stained glass windows. Very often people put their name on this. This is donated by, I don't know, whoever. And some people would not give if they couldn't get that recognition, but they don't want to do it anonymously. And that's an interesting test in and of itself as well, because a lot of people give to signal something to other people. And that's something psychologically to factor in. Jesus talked about, he was hanging out in the courts of the temple, and of course the widow's mite, the famous story of the widow's mite, where he sees this widow, and he can tell she's a widow because of the way she's dressed, and she's very impoverished, and she gives these two small copper coins, which are called leptas, and it was enough to buy enough flour to make one muffin cake. So she's quite literally giving her last meal to the temple establishment, and she puts it in the temple treasury. And she's not making a big deal out of it. doesn't want anybody to see it. Jesus says, truly, she's given more than the others because she gave out of her poverty, and the others are giving out of their wealth, their surplus. They don't even feel it. They don't feel the pinch when they give, but yet they're writing these big cardboard checks. They want everybody to see it. Jesus says, don't blow a horn when you're giving in the Sermon on the Mount. Well, there literally was a big horn. There was like a shofar. You've seen this, and it was part of worship among the Hebrews to blow the shofar. Well, the temple treasury where they put the money in was shaped like a shofar. So it literally was tooting your own horn sometimes to do this in public where everybody could see you. Wow, this guy is so generous, or this person's so generous. And so we have to really be careful about the motive there. And as I've told you before too, it's that account, it's not just about the woman's generosity. Jesus has just talked about how the teachers of the law and the temple establishment, they were devouring widows' houses. In other words, they should have been helping these people, but they just took from them. And case in point, here's this widow whose house is devoured. No one is looking after her. And this is part of the avariciousness of the temple establishment that Jesus was just so upset about. And it would lead to God's judgment. Anyways, let's go to the phones right now. Marlene in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I hope I can express this right. So I just wanted to talk about a time when my husband and I felt like God was saying, was pushing us out of a place of security and to spend more money.
Interesting.
And we both had sort of rocky childhoods. Our fathers, I mean, interestingly enough, they both lost a lot of money and then made a lot of money. But we were raised in the time when we didn't have a lot of money, and that's what sticks with us, is not having a lot of money. So then we're married for a few years, and we're making, you know, we're both professional people. We're making a decent wage, but we're living in the houses we would have lived in when our families were not doing well. We, you know, it was surrounded by other houses, pokey little backyard, and we were afraid to move out of there. And literally one of our friends was moving and came to us and said, would you like to buy our house? Because we loved their house, but it was a couple or three steps above where we were living. Mm-hmm. And we said to each other, no, we can't do that. But we both realized it was out of fear, and that on paper, hey, we can afford this house. And we really felt like God saying, trust me, it's going to be okay. So, God, you know, it's just interesting to me that God can also push you into spending more money. And it's been a wonderful decision 16 years later.
It's an interesting thing to say. And I thank you for that call, Marlene, because it's all about resources that God has entrusted us with and how we use them and for what purpose. And a home, a good and decent home to raise your family in is not a bad thing. Especially, I know somebody who lives in a very nice home, and he always said that he and his wife consciously, one of the reasons why they got this particular home, and it has sort of an entertaining area, if you will, like it was big enough to they could have people over, they wanted to use it to evangelize. They were like, we want to be able to have, for people to come in, and they were involved in youth ministry, and we want to be able to invite kids to come in and have a place to go where they could hang out, they could talk, and we could do scripture study with them, do Bible study, share with them, and really expose them to a good Catholic family life. And so I think it's all about detachment. It's all about detachment and having a spirit of poverty really means just taking very good care of the things that God has entrusted us with. And that's sometimes hard to do. I think detachment is the key, because not everybody's detached. And St. Jose Maria told the story during the Spanish Civil War about in a soup kitchen. There was this guy who was destitute, completely destitute, but he was avaricious. He had this pewter spoon that he would eat his soup with, and nobody could touch it. Only he could see it, kept it hidden in his jacket. This was like his precious, like my precious. It was like Lord of the Rings. And this guy did not, he was actually like kind of a greedy person in a certain sense, even though he had nothing. And so there are other people who, and the gospel is full of examples of this, who had means, but they gave to God out of their means. Think about Nicodemus, who provided an honorable burial for Jesus, a proper burial, we could say. Think about others, the wife of Herod's steward, right? Who who was, you know, a woman of means, and she gave to the apostles so that they could continue their ministry. And so I think that's really the key here. It's being, again, a good steward of time, talent, and treasure, and just trying to do that well. Sometimes because of the nature of one's work, and maybe it's not always fair. Like you could say the teacher who's hardworking, probably, maybe you could make an argument, maybe that person needs to be paid more than an athlete or an investment banker, but that's not the way it is. It may not be fair, but we have to deal with reality as it is. Now, that's not saying don't take that profession. If God's calling you there and you've got the gifts for it and you want to make a difference, go for it. But whatever we've been entrusted with, we have to prove faithful. And that's on so many levels. And that's what's so challenging about the gospel. And that's detachment. It's not always easy. Adherence. We can only be attached to God's will. We can only be attached to God's will. Not even the people in our lives whom we love, they may be called from us. We can only be attached to God. And that's tough. That's a tough lesson for everyone. So anyways, some interesting food for thought for sure. Wasn't written from a spiritual point of view, this piece that I read, but I do think there's a lot of application in the spiritual life, to be sure. Now, don't forget, tomorrow, Dean Koontz, the famed writer, will be joining us. I think you'll really enjoy hearing about him, his journey to Catholicism, his journey to faith. Does it come out in his books? A lot of you guys read his stuff. Join me tomorrow on the program, 5 p.m. Central. He will be on. Rich Gannon later in the week. Got a big one. Big week planned for you guys here on The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Patrick Alok took your phone calls. Jim Schaefer produced. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.